The day of the phone call, Arthur had spent a satisfying morning chatting and pottering in his spacious and surprisingly productive garden. He'd cooked up a storm for lunch while admiring some rainbow-coloured parrots, then taken a stroll down the track under a tree that was covered in orange blossoms after a good wet season. He'd serendipitously arrived at the local moonshine shack just as some of the lads were trying some new and explosive concoctions. They seemed to be close to splitting the cider atom, with the last batch having gotten an apple pip caught in the pipe that was supposed to release the gas, and the clay keg having cracked and creaked ominously until it had exploded. The women were not far off in a happy gaggle around their own dangerous inventions, and the two groups occasionally crossed paths on the commons, the lush oval with a playground nearby where the kids ecstatically fought, cried and rolled down the grassy slopes. On stumbling home, Arthur had filled a bath with water and lemongrass, set a fire under it and put in the wooden seat. He'd lain back contentedly in this aromatic steam, gazing wonderingly at the stars. He had mused about life, the universe and everything, and how he didn't want to go to heaven, as it would be full of religious nutters, all fighting over who should be there, just like on Earth. Actually, he thought, heaven's more like life here. Gardening, socialising, cooking, eating, drinking, wandering across the creek to the beach, an adventure in itself, as the creek was always different. Sure, the most exciting thing that ever happened was a pair of nesting dullard birds or a spontaneously combusting hay bale, and strangely, no one seemed the least bit interested in learning cricket, despite his lengthy and detailed descriptions of the game. Nor were there any crosswords, except the ones he made up himself, and this had turned out to be no fun at all. Social occasions were fraught, as he tried to remember who in this close-knit community wasn't talking to whom this week. But on the full moon, he would take a pleasant stroll across the commons, and then a peculiar wincing crab-like dance as he hit a prickle patch, to a party around a bonfire with elders and kids and young maidens and bucks and strange initiation rites. It was idyllic, so of course it had to end, the universe being what it is. The phone, as has been mentioned, rang. Arthur didn't have a clue how it worked, except for the battery part, and he had plenty of them. But it let him stay in contact with Trillian, even though she lived on the other side of the Milky Way galaxy. Trillian was the mother of his daughter, Random, whose teenaged existence he had discovered recently, unexpectedly and, to be honest, somewhat traumatically. Phone calls usually meant trouble, or something to do with Random, or, more usually, both. It was Trillian. "How's Random?" she asked. "What? Isn't she with you?" replied Arthur. "No, she left 2 days ago. She should be there by now. I told you she was coming." "No, you didn't." "Yes, I did. I said she was entertaining some wild idea about going to a disaster area gig. And could you have her for a few weeks till she got over it?" "Oh." Arthur started guiltily. "Yes." He now had a dim recollection of Trillian calling when he was with some neighbours in the middle of testing whether their pear cider was ready for consumption. A process which involved quite a number of different tests, such as lighting it to see if it burnt or exploded, and then trying a tankard to be sure, and then a couple more to be sure to be sure. "Zark," said Trillian, "the little..." "We're going to have to go and get her. Hold tight. Don't go anywhere," she ordered, and hung up. Arthur was left staring at the device. He never went anywhere anyway, even if he'd had the means to do so.
Now, of course, astute readers who've actually worked their way through all of Douglas Adams' wonderful Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy would have recognised a few key names there, such as Arthur and Trillian and other things there. We're continuing here with the story of Arthur Dent, and I have to ask you as an author, because it's an incredible thing to take on another dead author's work and start writing another series to it. What possessed you to start writing about this and giving us further insight into what happened to Arthur next?
Yeah, it certainly is a great responsibility to try and match someone of Douglas Adams's genius. So I undertook it very nervously over a long period. The idea actually came to me at the Byron Bay Blues and Roots Festival about 9 years ago. And I thought it would be a great vehicle to try and get across some of the amazing non-violent actions that have occurred in Australia, such as the first blockade against a coal mine west of the Divide out on the Liverpool Plains, and more recently the Bentley blockade against unconventional gas, which is similar to coal seam gas. I just thought these issues are so important and urgent that they need a really good vehicle in which to convey them. So I decided to unashamedly rip off some of the wonderful characters from The Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy and try and build up the environmental things that Adams had already put in there. So he'd talked about how environmentalists had tried to stop the disaster area gig because it would have destroyed a planet, and the band had resolved that problem by taking the environmentalists out and having them shot. And I thought it would be a great starting point to imagine that some of those environmentalists had survived, and what would they be doing now?
Well, it's interesting that so much of what Douglas Adams wrote was prescient. And in some cases, I think he thought he was just really satirising the whole thing and projecting it, and it was incredible and it wouldn't actually happen. But we're not laughing as much now, are we?
That's right, yeah. It's a lot of the stuff that he predicted has come about. You know, he was certainly a real pioneer in terms of the internet. He was a big fan of fan fiction himself. He believed that it gave ordinary people the opportunity to expand on his universe, and it also took people back to his original works. So I'm hoping he's not rolling in his grave. He felt that The Hitchhiker's Guide ended on a fairly pessimistic note and did feel that he wanted something a bit more optimistic. So I've tried to create something that's, in the midst of the climate crises and the extinction crises that we're in, some solution, some way forward, which is basically people power, but well-organised people power.
So we are to assume that at the end of your book, the dolphins all come back?
Well, one of the characters is a bit dolphin-like. He has three ears, and one of them is on the back of his head, and water does fly out of his head after he's been in the surf, and he's an extraordinary surfer. So, yeah, there's definitely some positive and hopeful elements to the book that I hope can help people break out of the paralysis and despair that a lot of people are feeling about the climate crises.
Well, I'm sure it helps us at least to have a little bit of a laugh. There must be something we can do, a little bit of black humour in here somewhere. You mentioned the fact that Douglas Adams was, encouraged fan fiction, in which people wrote, different parallel stories and extrapolated from what he put in his book. Do you think people are now going to do this with your book?
Quite possibly. Yeah, I mean, with the internet, there are so many new opportunities to get stories out there. There's already a huge amount of Douglas Adams fan fiction, and some of it is really good. And, of course, there's the sixth in the trilogy was written by Ian Colfer. So his work has lived on. And, feel that I've tried very hard to not let down his memory, to not mangle the wonderful work that he did before he passed away.